There are maybe a couple of aspects of this next story worth talking about some more, although quite a bit has been said in the past week about the ACC figures, which showed a 60% surge in sports-related injuries in the middle school years in that 10 to 14 age group over the past decade, double the increase of any other age range. Early specialisation in sport is being blamed, overtraining at a young age, the so-called increasing professionalisation of junior sport. Dr. Simon Walters is AUT's Head of Department for Coaching and Health and Physical Education. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Jim.
General question first. You want sport to be fun again for children and young people, yes?
Put simply, yes. It's the reason that we participate from a young age and even when we're older.
And I think you say youth sports in Western societies have become increasingly controlled and regulated by adults with adult ambitions, which takes the fun out of it for many children. Did it used to be any different?
That's a good question. I think it did. When it started to change, I'm not from New Zealand, but I came here about 20 years ago and I started researching this about 10 to 12 years ago. But I noticed that sort of concerns were starting to be voiced back in the 1990s about sort of inappropriate adult behaviour on the sidelines in children's sport.
Yes, and the adult behaviour on the sidelines is a very good point to mention. But undeniably, there are children who find sport fun, and you talk to them, I'm sure, and so do I. But equally, it's beneficial for young people who don't think it's much fun to get exercise and be part of teams. It's not always fun, is it? I mention this because North Harbour Rugby scrapped junior rep rugby based on research that showed young people wanting fun. And they don't all want that, but it's still good for them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I sort of think fun is a simplistic word, you know, because for some kids, winning is fun. And what we do know is that children, for the most part, like competition. And I think what's happened is that we've veered too much towards a win-at-all-costs attitude, where winning is the sole focus of the game. Whereas, you know, we all love a game which is competitive, and that's where the thrill and the excitement of it comes in. But it's possibly adults lose perspective, and it becomes a little bit, you know, a win-at-all-costs. But, you know, when we talk about adults, sport for children and young people relies heavily on parents and coaches who are volunteers. So for the most part, you know, most adults are really supportive and behave in appropriate ways. You know, it can be spoiled by a few, but basically if the coach is taking it too seriously and it's about a win at all costs, then we start to lose sight of fundamentally why we play the game in the first place.
On Scoop, in an article you wrote with Tim Watman, you mentioned the backlash against the North Harbour decision, you know, PC gone mad, etc. But these people possibly have a strong instinct that team sports are healthy and are vital. That's part of that reaction.
Oh, yeah, I don't think we dispute that team sports are really positive. Well, some of the concerns we've got, and speaking to some of the sports organisations we're working with, and rugby are just one of those, The concern they've got is that we're selecting representative teams too early. So basically, the focus for those teams is really on winning and results at too early an age. And if you look at the children who we do select at those early points, they're usually, you know, especially in these physical sports, where your performance is basically measured by physical attributes such as speed, strength, agility, and height as well. In some of the sports, we tend to select children based on those qualities, and we're potentially closing the door on a number of talented children who probably aren't as physically developed at that time. So the question to ask is, you know, what are the benefits of selecting representative teams at 11, 12 and 13, and some sports are a lot younger than that, when basically you're closing the door on a huge amount of potential.
It seems to have taken sports like rugby forever to deal to the glaring problem of smaller children being, you know, bashed around by opponents of the same age but twice as big. And I heard a father and son, a very sporty son, raise the issue again the other day. Is that what is contributing, do you think, to the ACC claims surge?
It's a bit tricky with the ACC because they can definitely identify that the injuries have gone up in the certain age groups. We conducted a study recently, one of my master students, Jodie McGowan, who's a physiotherapist. So what we've been hearing from the medical profession for a long time in recent years is that they're concerned that the injuries that they're seeing increasingly in younger and younger people are what we classify as overuse injuries. So if you're talking about the big kid in rugby crashing into a little kid, you know, that's a collision injury, and that's going to happen if you put the big kid up against a small kid. What we're concerned about is these ones where, for example, if you're doing too much, too young, of the same thing over and over again, something eventually is going to give. And the medical professionals are saying, well, we're seeing these injuries here, which we didn't used to see. So Jody did a study with intermediate school-aged children down at the Ames tournament, which is a big tournament they have in New Zealand, and looked at about 1,000 kids and looked at their injury history over the previous year. And if they said they'd been injured, it was identified, well, was that a sort of collision injury, if you want to term it that way, or was it another injury? So, for example, if it was a hamstring strain, okay, did that just happen in that game, or was it a gradual build-up? Were you starting to get little tweaks a few weeks before that? And, you know, possibly we'd look at sort of that repetitive continuing to train, continuing to play, continuing to use the same muscle groups, the same movement patterns in one sport, and something's going to go eventually. So I think the key message is it's the volume of what they're doing, possibly in limited numbers of sports rather than a range of sports, with which are leading to the injuries that we're concerned about.
I'm only a layperson, but I would think that a big reason for higher intensity, high volume training from an early age is what is role modelled in adult sport. I mean, it's got faster and tougher and rougher for men and women, and you can't really expect lower grades not to reflect that, you would think.
I would sort of agree, and I'd sort of say we're seeing almost like a professionalisation of young people's sport, which is mirroring what's happening in the adult game. But the sports organisations have a responsibility. They're the ones who put the structures in place. So that's why I applaud North Harbour Rugby. They were the first ones in rugby to take this stance, and they were fully aware of the backlash that they would receive, basically because, you know, it's quite often it's the structures that drive the behaviour. And if you start selecting representative teams at an early age, it's more likely that these children then are going to start to specialise in the one sport and not playing in the range of sports that we really would be encouraging them to play in at younger ages. So we'd like to see kids playing a range of sports, especially in the primary school years, and only specialising in a sport when they're ready. So we've done a study recently with some elite sports players in New Zealand, and a study was done by Ken Hodge, I think it was almost about 8 years ago, when we looked at some of our elite athletes in New Zealand. And a lot of them have come from rural backgrounds, rural New Zealand, small communities, where they've played every sport going because they're quite talented at sport. It's a small community. They play in every team. They play up an age. They play mixed, the girls playing with the boys. And if they're talented, they decide quite late on that they want to specialise in the sport that they want to specialise in. And that they don't seem to be experiencing these injuries, these overuse injuries, that these other kids are. You know, if you take the example of football, if you've got a kid who's playing football in the winter season, it used to be a winter season sport, now we've got summer soccer, now we've got futsal. So you might have a kid who's playing 12 months of the year. They might be playing for the school team, they might be playing for the club team, and they might also be in an academy, and it's just basically too much for the developing frame, especially in this 12 to 14 age group, which ACCs are highlighted as a problem area.
Yeah. It's the structures that drive the behaviour. It's also the structures that keep the sports alive. I mean, is it a gamble what North Harbour's doing? Because it's to stop kids being left out and it's to increase participation. But equally, as you've said, a lot of children are competitive and their parents certainly are. You see that on the sidelines along with the bad behaviour. The risk is that parents won't see the point of taking part if competition has disappeared.
Yeah, I don't think they're taking competition away. They're looking at alternatives where there'll be game formats and there will be competition, but it's basically this representative structure that they've looked at as problematic. And they've looked at it as problematic for two reasons. It's not just the participation and the ongoing participation and fun. It's actually athlete development pathways and talent ID as well. So basically, even though we're selecting them early and they're playing representative football, those aren't necessarily the players who come through their pathways into the elite game. So you'd have to ask the question then, well, basically, if there's no athlete development benefit and also that the fun and the joy out of playing these games is going as well, and our participation rates are dropping off, which is what these organisations are concerned of, well, we have to try something. Is it a risk? Well, yes, it is. But they couldn't continue as they are because they've got some big issues. One of the big problems we've got is talking to parents. We talk to sports organisations and we talk to coaches, and many coaches understand some of the issues. But it's actually getting that message out to parents and having a conversation about some of the research and some of the reasons behind this. Because what tends to happen, it gets labelled as soft and it's only about participation. It's not about competition. So somehow organisations need to have the conversations with their parents where parents can ask questions and become more informed about the reasons for the decisions they're making.
The dangers of early specialisation. Out of interest, is there any evidence that you can follow the Tiger Woods-Williams sisters' path and excel by starting young and participating that intensely?
Absolutely. That's a proven pathway to elite performance. But there's another proven pathway to elite performance where kids engage in a range of games, activities, but also free play, which is really important, which kids aren't doing now, where you pick up a range of motor coordination skills. And that is also a proven pathway to elite performance. The difference is, for every one Tiger Woods, 99.999% of kids who follow that pathway don't make it. See, as a parent, you have to ask yourself, okay, my kid's got a little bit of talent in golf or tennis. You know, how many kids spend their childhood and their youth hitting a golf ball or hitting a tennis ball and they don't make it? They end up either with burnout or overuse injuries or just walk away from the game. We're arguing that there's another way, and it's a proven way. Many of our elite athletes in New Zealand have come through this pathway, and the costs aren't as great. So if a kid's gone through playing a range of sports, they've decided to specialise when they're ready, maybe that's about 15 or 16 years of age. If they don't make it on the elite pathway, they've got all these skills that they can fall back on and they can pick up another sport and keep playing. What we're finding increasingly is that these kids have gone through quite intensive sort of childhood and youth participating in one sport only. If they don't make it or they get injured, they're lost to physical activity and sport completely. Yeah, it's a proven pathway, but it's a problematic one.
Rugby, we know, is in trouble with participation. Quoting you, the period of adolescence is the time most associated with dropout from sport, and a key reason commonly cited is that sport stops being fun.
Yeah.
You said that. It's also presumably because there is more fun to be had elsewhere. You know, for those who are really good at sport, it may still be fun. For the rest, it may be a relief giving up, many of them. What makes people think that the fun will continue?
The reason you keep doing things is because you love it. So, you know, if parents and coaches can create an environment where these kids come through and they actually love the game, and your job as a coach is to get them to nurture that love of the game and redefining success. So success as a coach is, are these kids all going to come back next season? Am I going to give them a quality experience, a positive experience, and help them to love the game? Yeah, that success, or is success winning this tournament? This is really important. Now, you know, some kids will get lost. You come into these teenage years, you start to rebel, and there's other interests as you come into the 15, 16 age group, and that's when the drop-off starts. But ultimately, if you really love something, you'll stay with it. And I think what's happening is that a lot of these young people are losing that love and passion of the game, which they have probably had in their primary school years, and it's become too serious too soon. You know, we've got to put the fun back into it, but we still create those competitive environments. I know that North Harbour Rugby are really looking hard at alternatives to fulfil that desire for competition. And they're working really hard to come up with some ideas and alternatives to this representative structure they used to have.
I come back to the question about how it's role modelled at the adult level. You know, an absolute elite, all of them big, no small halfbacks anymore, no swift and slender wings.
Yeah.
You know, no impression that there's a place in the game for everybody. And I know it's television and entertainment and big money, but you've got to point the finger at the adult game and the fact that the effect that's had on the lower levels again, don't you?
Yeah, I agree. You know, the 1990s professionalisation, you know, the professionalism sort of emerged in rugby. And if you look at any old YouTube clip of a game, I grew up in Wales watching rugby, and you know, some of the most exciting wingers and Matens that I watched as a kid growing up, they wouldn't play the game today with those physiques. They just wouldn't be there. Some of the wingers today are built like the props of yesteryear. It's changed. It's definitely changed, and that's one of the a cost, if you like, of professionalism. We get bigger, we get stronger, we get faster. You know, it's a far more physical game than it used to be. It's also looking at, as this country becomes more diverse and more people are moving in, creating versions of the game possibly that people can still engage in. So if you don't want to play that full-on physical 15-a-side, that there's tag rugby options, that there's different types of rugby, different formats of the game that people can still engage in. So I think that, you know, although that's not your traditional rugby, if the participation rates are dropping and people aren't coming to your product anymore in the droves that they used to, you have to look at alternatives.
One more thing. And I think, again, this is a person you mentioned, Amanda Visek, who's a researcher in the US.
Yes, yeah.
Her research found that fun for children meant up to 81 different things. And
yeah, that's right.
That number one was getting compliments from coaches, followed by playing well during a game. Winning came in at number 30. How can there have been 27 aspects in between?
It's quite amazing. When I ran focus groups with children in my PhD study back in about 2010. And basically the questions were, well, what do you enjoy about your sport and what don't you enjoy about your sport? And it was a pretty open-ended conversation. But I had to, at the end of the focus group, I had to say, none of you have mentioned winning. What is winning not important? And I had to introduce the concept. So, you know, we quite often get adults telling us that, you know, kids like winning and that's what it's all about. That's not what kids tell us, and that's not what they tell us in the research over and over again, and that's internationally and in New Zealand. Now, there's probably parents at home thinking, well, my kid likes winning. You know, obviously there are kids who do. That's why it came in at number 30, but it's certainly not up there right at the top. I think 4 or 5 of the top 10 relate to the coach, and receiving positive comments from the coaches, I think, was number one, but also, you know, a positive environment, things like that. So maybe that's what we need to focus on, is just creating that positive environment for these kids. Let them have a good time. And if they do, when they get to that vital age of 15 or 16, when parents, I'm sure, want them to be physically active and continue to be physically active rather than doing all the other things we don't want them doing, it's like if they've loved it up until that point, you've got a good chance they might stay with it.
It's interesting you say that. Our children don't care so much about the result. There are other factors in their enjoyment or otherwise of sport. So we may just have to get our heads around a new environment and a less adult-focused or at least driven way of doing things, yeah?
Oh, yeah, that's right. The work I do is really about creating positive experiences for young people. So I'd love to see a move towards that and parents get on board with it, yeah.
Good to talk with you and thank you for your time.
Yeah, no, thanks very much for the opportunity, Jim. Really appreciate it.
Dr. Simon Walters.